Oi. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw an eye and give your attention. This court is now in session. God save the United States and the Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Thank you. Good morning. Judge Castle, to my right is Judge Hagel, to my left is Judge Davis. We're here in the matter of Osmond versus Peet as a docket number of 05-2901. The appellant is representing himself. Would you please introduce yourself?
Brian,
please stand when you talk to the court.
Brian Osmond.
Thank you. And we also have an amicus here. Would you please?
Yes, sir. I'm Bill Thompson, amicus here.
And who is next to you?
My associate, Bill Cleveland.
Bill Cleveland. Thank you. And the secretary?
That one.
Yes, and?
Ed Castle.
Yes. Thank you. Now, we've allotted 30 minutes for the parties and 30 minutes for amicus. Mr. Osmond, I'll give you the choice. Would you like to go first or have your amicus go first?
I'd like to go first, please.
All right. Take the podium. You have 30 minutes. You may reserve time if you want for a rebuttal. Would you like to reserve time?
Yes, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal at the end, please.
All right. Begin.
May it please the court. The VA General Counsel has overstepped their authority in taking a legislative role rather than a judicial role by denying benefits under Chapter 35. The VA abused its power when it made a new law where law did not exist. The VA has authority to interpret, not make, the law. In making this new law, the VA denied benefits arbitrarily and capriciously.
Before you go any further, would you tell me what benefits it is you are seeking exactly?
Chapter 35 benefits, educational benefits.
What benefits have you received so far to date under Chapter 35?
Sorry, I don't understand the question.
Have you received any benefits?
Yes.
What benefits?
Chapter 35 benefits under my father.
And how many months?
It was for no more than 45 months.
All right. So did you receive 45 months?
I cannot answer that. I'm sorry.
All right. At this time. What exactly are you seeking then now?
I'm seeking educational benefits on behalf of the disabled veteran, my mother.
Yep. And under that, what are you seeking? An additional 45 months? And what exactly are you seeking?
I'm just seeking the benefits that are entitled to my mother for disabled veteran.
And what are they?
Educational benefits.
Okay. Let me see if I can... What educational benefits is your mother entitled to under Chapter 35?
My amicus curiae lawyer is going to be presenting the law next time.
I feel that question is
better reserved for him.
I'm just asking you, trying to understand what it is you want. You're entitled to certain benefits through a parent, and your argument, I understand, under the law is going to be through both parents for a certain amount of months.
Yes.
So are you asking... You've gotten 45 months.
On behalf of my father.
There's no more that you need or want under your father's, what you say comes through your father's entitlement.
Correct.
And you are asking for what? An additional 45 months while you go to school, or a concurrent 45 months so that you get paid twice while you go to school? Which?
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Are you asking for, if you went to school for 45 months and got money from the government through your father, are you asking for additional time to continue school or pay for school that you did?
Pay for school that I did.
Additional, beyond the 45 months?
Yes.
Okay, so you're not asking for concurrent, meaning you get two payments for 45 months.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Could I ask a question?
Yes,
perhaps. Let me mention one thing. In the hospital, what do they call you?
Intern.
Okay, do they use any other title?
Doctor.
Okay. In this environment, we use the title Your Honor or Served when you're talking to the court. So just you're claiming entitlement under both your mother and your father.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Now, you've already been paid the full benefit under your father.
That's correct.
But you have attended additional school beyond the 45 months that you got from your father, correct?
That is correct,
yes. And I understand that you're seeking payment for that additional period of time, which I think is 10 months, correct?
In addition to the 45 months?
Correct. Mm-hmm. The time that you went to school beyond 45 months, correct?
Yes.
Now, in theory, you could also, I guess, since you claim an entitlement to under both benefits, you could be seeking retroactive payment under your mother, which would, in effect, as Judge Castle mentioned, give you, quote, double payment for the period of, for the entire 45 months. Are you seeking that?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so you're seeking the entire 45 months under both eligibilities, as you would say it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Does that clarify your question?
I think.
I mean, that's why I had the same question.
You're thinking it both for the 10 months beyond the 45 and then an additional 35 that would be concurrent with what you had received with your dad.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. You may proceed.
The denial of these benefits were arbitrary and capricious in that it violated due process that was guaranteed under the U.S. Constitution. The due process requires notice in the Federal Registry. The VA failed to provide notice of changes in procedural and substantive rights relating to the educational benefits for children of disabled veterans under Chapter 35. The VA did not provide notice until long after benefits under both parents' disabilities were sought. Congress intended to provide concurrent educational benefits under Chapter 35 to child of veteran parents, both of whom are disabled.
Now, Dr. Osmond.
Yes, Your Honor.
Why do you believe that, what you just said, that Congress intended that you be entitled, or veterans in your position be entitled to both benefits?
Because
not why you believe it, but why you think Congress believed it when they enacted the law.
I can't make a claim, Your Honor, on the behalf of Congress. However, the instatement of Chapter 35 benefits was for this purpose.
But you just said that Congress intended that concurrent benefits be paid. What are you basing that on?
Your Honor, basically, from what I've been reading over the past 4 years, you know, between the internet and what I've picked up in the law library in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
Do you have any sites? Did you bring any sites to what you've been reading that support your proposition?
Not at this time, but I can certainly provide a supplement within 7 days, Your Honor, if the court requests. So the VA should pay for concurrent benefits because the concurrent benefits under the same program are not excluded. Both my parents started a military career separately before they were married and before I was born. Mom worked 24 years and Dad worked 28 years with these separate careers and benefits. These benefits included education for me, their child, in case of my parents' disability. Both my parents worked and planned to finance my dream of becoming a doctor, and I owe my parents thousands of dollars of loans from their retirement funds, in addition to student loan debt incurred as a substitute to the VA educational benefits not paid. I enrolled in medical school assuming that the finances were available. Subsequently, my dad injured his back while on duty. His income dropped 60%, and that same year, my mother's service-connected heart problems and several cancer surgeries made her disabled as well. In 2003, I started receiving Chapter 35, Section 8 benefits on my father's behalf disability, which provided less than $10,000 a year. The tuition at Drexel University College of Medicine was $38,000 a year plus several thousand dollars for books, supplies, exams, and rent was also an additional $10,000 a year. Living expenses apart were extra. In short, I was spending $60,000 plus and receiving $10,000 from the VA. And my parents started removing their money from their retirement funds. My mother became disabled, and I received an eligibility application for Chapter 35 benefits. In 2005, finances became a problem. I even considered dropping out of medical school so that I could get a job and start paying for these loans. I went forth with medical school because the Chapter 35 serves to aid the deceased or disabled veteran's child to acquire the education that he would have aspired to if his parent had not become disabled. And I relied to my detriment on the Muskogee, Oklahoma VA Education Center statements.
What was your detriment?
The financial detriment.
What was your detriment, though? If the law says you're not entitled to it, what's your detriment?
Well, at the time, I was told from the Muskogee, Oklahoma VA Education Center that if you received an eligibility application, and which I replied yes, then I was told that I was eligible. And had I not been eligible, it could have given me the opportunity to seek, you know, alternative measures to not enroll in medical school and incur such a debt. Okay. Your Honor.
Could I get a handle, make sure I have a handle on the timeline here? Your inquiry to the Muskogee, Oklahoma office was in what year?
Your Honor, the application was October 6th, 2003. And the certificate of eligibility was received October 28th, 2003, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. And when did you apply to medical school?
It was in August of 2003, Your Honor.
Okay.
Can I follow up? The October 2003, was that for your the benefits through your father?
Correct, Your Honor.
Did you apply for benefits from your mother?
Please repeat the question, Your Honor.
When did you apply for benefits under your mother's name?
The application, Your Honor, was October 6, 2003.
I thought that was through your father. When did you apply for benefits through your father's name?
The application for my father was
I thought you were explaining it. 2003, you got benefits through your dad, and in 2005 is when you started applying through your mother. Is that correct?
Your Honor, I do not recall at this time. So as per the Muskogee, Oklahoma VA Education Center statements, they quoted that I was eligible, that these were two earned benefits.
And what was the dates that they were quoting you then? Was that in 2005?
I'm going off of the certificate of eligibility in 2003, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
Dr. Osmond, when did you first receive a eligibility application?
Your Honor, on whose behalf?
Well,
mother or the father?
Did you get them at the same time?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, well, then my question is, when did you receive your application first?
Your Honor, for my mother, it was the VA notified of my mother's disability on September 30th, 2003, and the application was for October 6th, 2003. On behalf of my father, I do not recall at this time.
Okay. Thank you.
So an example of duplication of these benefits under different laws, which is not allowed, would include Chapter 35 in the Montgomery GI Bill. Congress expressly excluded this type of dual eligibility and never excluded concurrent eligibility. The Title 38 USCA Chapter 35 outlines eligibility for educational benefits. Congress wrote this law with several exceptions and exclusions to benefit eligibility. Chapter 35 does not exclude concurrent benefits based on two active duty parents. It prohibits eligibility under two programs in two different sections, but does not prohibit concurrent benefits under the same program. Congress's intent to provide concurrent benefits is thus inferred. The VA failed to follow Chapter 35 and congressional intent when it erroneously barred concurrent benefits. To deny current benefits under Chapter 35 is tantamount into providing only half of the amount of educational assistance required under Chapter 35 for a child who has only one parent as a veteran. Clearly, Congress did not authorize the VA to provide half benefits to the child of a single parent who is a veteran. and thus we should not infer that the VA is authorized to provide half of the benefits to me because both of my parents are disabled veterans.
Okay, I understand your argument to say, look, each of my parents is entitled to this benefit, and therefore I should be able to receive the benefit through each of them. Is that correct, Doctor?
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you explain to me, and you say that Congress, there's nowhere in the statute that Congress prohibits that from occurring. Is that correct, Doctor?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Then how do you explain Section 3511 of Title 38, which says basically that each eligible person shall be entitled to educational assistance under this chapter for an aggregate period not in excess of 45 months? How is that not a specific restriction on your ability to receive more than 45 months or more than benefits for under one of your parents?
Your Honor, from what I understand from that statement is that it does provide a limitation under one disabled veteran, under one parent.
Okay, but it says each eligible person. And would you not be the eligible person to receive the benefits?
I actually don't understand. I'm sorry.
Well, I can only read the statute. It says each eligible person shall be entitled to educational assistance. Okay, and are you the person that's the eligible person to receive educational assistance?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And it says that each eligible person will be entitled to not in excess of 45 months of benefits under the chapter. So how is that not a specific limitation on your right to receive those benefits? So your statement to us, Dr. Osman, was nowhere in the statute is there a limitation or a prohibition for me to receive benefits from my father and from my mother. Well, each of those would give you in excess of 45 months if you receive both of them. But there's a statutory provision that says each eligible person only gets 45 months, which would seem to be a specific limitation, contrary to your statement. Do you have any explanation for that?
Well, the facts that I present come from a memo from the VA General Counsel opinion from November of 1992 that detailed that a child of two veteran parents that were both killed on active duty applied for these Chapter 35 benefits based on both parents. And this child could receive Chapter 35 benefits concurrently, doubling the monthly rate. And the VA published this in the Federal Register in 1992. And I'm entitled to receive these concurrent benefits under Chapter 35 because the 1992 VA opinion requires such concurrent benefit payment for parents who are concurrently disabled from service-connected conditions.
Do you have the number, Doctor, of that General Counsel opinion?
I can provide that at a later date to the court if there was.
Okay, well, if we need it, we'll ask for it. But it was 1992 General Counsel opinion?
Yes, Your Honor.
You happen to have the title of the General Counsel opinion?
Okay.
Do you happen to have the title with you of that General Counsel opinion? If you don't, that's fine.
I can provide that later.
We have very, very competent law clerks who will find it.
Thank you, Your Honor. Okay. So this opinion from the General Counsel in 1992 applies because it was properly published in the Federal Register and thus meets the requirements for due process. The court should disregard the VA counsel opinion dated January 24, 2002 because it was not published in this Federal Register and because it creates law where no law existed. The VAOPGCPREC 1-2002 states that concurrent eligibility is not allowed. This is clearly erroneous because, as discussed earlier, the VA was required to publish this opinion and failed to do so. Moreover, the VA does not have the authority from Congress to deny benefits where the express intent of Congress was to provide for these benefits. In the instant case, Chapter 35 benefits under the same law are not duplication. The VA should provide educational benefits under both parents. I've suffered financially for the past 5 years of medical school, and had I been aware of the VA's actions, I could have abandoned my aspirations to become a doctor and pursued something that would not incur such a debt. And my aspirations to become a doctor were almost squashed, except for my own perseverance and drive and the assumption that these benefits would be available. Being a resident in training, I will continue to suffer for more the anticipated 4 years because of this VA's decision. So I pray that this court rule in my favor, ordering the VA to pay arrears and educational benefits to the amount equal to these loans and interest incurred in seeking a medical degree and licensure, and certainly the costs and fees associated with pursuing this appeal, and issuing a finding that the VA violated due process in failing to file a 2002 opinion into the Federal Register.
Dr. Ottman, did I just understand you to say that you were seeking the cost of the loans that you have incurred to date plus the cost for incurring that you've incurred for this appeal?
That's correct, Your Honor.
In addition to the educational benefits?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And to provide that any and all relief the court finds necessary to render a just result. This concludes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson? Mr. Thompson, do you have the November 92 OGC opinion that was referred to?
Your Honor, I don't recall that being a GC opinion, but I'm not...
Do you know what he was referring to?
Yes, Your Honor. Appended to the opening brief for the VA is a letter, and that letter is informing the regional offices about the precedent opinion issued on January 25, 2002, in which the VA rules that concurrent benefits are prohibited. And it says that the prior practice was starting in 92, there was a advisory opinion issued to the regional offices in which the prior practice was to grant concurrent benefits, but not to exceed 45 months. So benefits were in essence doubled, but they're only provided for a 45-month period. And it refers to the precedent opinion in 2002 as a new rule.
And so, but you haven't actually seen the underlying November 92 document?
No, Your Honor. I just went off of the letter. I'm not aware if it's in the Federal Register or not, but I can certainly look into the issue and provide any supplemental guidance this court may request.
All right, thank you.
You said that was attached to the VA's opening brief?
Yes, Your Honor. It should appear at the very last page as an attachment.
Yeah, I'm looking.
Let me just confirm. The letter you're referring to is... signed by Judith Caden. Is that the letter?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Thank you.
I hope to discuss today, first, how the VA failed to comply with the notice and comment rulemaking requirements of the APA. Second, how the VA failed to comply with the publication requirements of the APA. And third, how the VA's rule prohibiting concurrent Chapter 35 benefits is contrary to the law. The statute is silent as to the payment of Chapter 35 benefits to the same eligible person. No express provision prohibiting concurrent payment of Chapter 35 benefits to the same person, to an individual exists. These are the words of VA General Counsel in its precedent opinion ruling that concurrent Chapter 35 benefits are prohibited. As General Counsel acknowledges, the statute is silent. And to fill in a rule in place of statutory silence is a substantive measure which must be accompanied by notice and comment.
Let's accept for a moment, counsel, that that is the case. What is the problem with the synopsis?
The summary, Your Honor?
Yes.
The final. Yes, Your Honor, the problem with the final rule is first that there is no provision. So there's no text to go off of. And so the next step would be to look at any congressional intent that might be there. And The congressional intent says that the purpose is to aid a child in achieving the education that child would have received but for the parent's injury. And in a situation where two parents are serving in the military, there's an expectation that, or an assumption that both parents could provide for the child's education. And where both of those parents are injured, then in order for that child to achieve the education he would have received but for the injuries, he must be given dual benefits. And that's the congressional intent, Your Honor. And secondly, there is at very least ambiguity because no express provision exists. And as this court knows, ambiguity is resolved in favor of the veteran under well-settled principles of the Supreme Court. So there's congressional intent, and also in the absence of any express provision, ambiguity, which must be resolved in favor of the beneficiary, Mr. Osmond.
I'm not so certain there's ambiguity. There's just no provision for legislation doesn't cover the circumstances we're presented with. I'm not certain we're really dealing with ambiguity so much as we're dealing with silence.
Yes, Your Honor, that's a very fair characterization, which underscores why it's a substantive rule. There's no text of the statute to be ambiguous. There's no text of a statute to interpret. The only thing that the VA can do is create an entirely new rule which fills a gap in the legislation, and this defies the very definition of what an interpretation would be. This court and others have ruled that any time an agency engages in such gap filling where there isn't a rule to interpret, that's a substantive rule which must be accompanied by notice and comment. Now, the VA, in its precedent opinion, discusses various statutory provisions and tries to assert that this is an interpretation, but this court has said that it's the substance of what the agency does and not what the agency calls what it does that is controlling. And they can't cite statutes that don't say anything about this particular case. The VA itself acknowledges that those statutes do not address concurrent Chapter 35 benefits. They address other provisions and concurrent benefits with regard to those provisions. And those don't say anything about whether or not concurrent Chapter 35 benefits are available. So this is not an interpretation. This is a new rule and a substantive one. And it's also interesting to note that on pages 4 and 10 of the VA's opening brief, the VA argues for Chevron deference on the basis that this is, in the VA's words, a gap-filling measure. Now the VA has completely changed gears in response to the challenge that they violated the APA, and now they're saying that this is an interpretive rule. But they really can't have it both ways. And the VA's initial impressions that the statute is silent, that this is gap-filling, that's really what this is. And the VA can't avoid the requirements of the APA by calling what is, in essence, a gap-filling substantive measure an interpretation. The question is, what did they do? And what they did was they created a new rule which must be accompanied by notice and comment, and the failure to abide by the notice and comment requirements requires that the precedent opinion be set aside, and because Mr. Osmond's board decision was based on that precedent opinion, that must also be reversed.
Let me ask you a question about that. Thinking through the, let's assume that we were to find that this is a substantive rule and that there was no notice and comment and therefore that the rule was void. You're correct that I think at least that the VA General Counsel opinion was really little more than a reference to the General Counsel opinion and adopted it per se. So what do we do then? Do we remand this case back to the board for them to make a determination? Is that what we do?
Your Honor, that would be one option, and that would be a possibility to remand it back to them for them to make a decision on the matter, and then if Mr. Osmond...
In other words, they wouldn't be bound by the general counsel opinion. They would just have to make a determination.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Based on the record.
That's correct, Your Honor. That could be one option.
Now, they could. Could they not seek a general counsel opinion at that point?
Your Honor, they could seek a general counsel opinion, but then they'd end up in the same situation where...
Well, I don't know. What about the court's decision in Splaine, for example, the Federal Circuit's decision in Splaine when that's what occurred?
Your Honor, the decision in Splane was based on a precedent opinion that actually interpreted the statutory provision about the presumption that an injury is incurred in or aggravated by service. So the distinction there would be that there was actually a statute to be interpreted. Here, because there is no statute to interpret, it would be an entirely different case in Splane.
Well, they would have to interpret, when it went back, they would have to interpret whether or not Dr. Osmond was entitled to concurrent benefits, correct? I mean, they could just, in essence, issue the same opinion again in this case, and then we'd be in precisely the same situation we were in Splane. If they reach the same conclusion, then we would have to here determine whether or not we agreed with the general counsel opinion. Correct?
Your Honor, the issue in Splane was not that in Splane the general counsel opinion interpreted language, and so that's the distinction. Were it this case, if they issued another general counsel opinion, that would again be binding to an entire class of citizens, individuals, as per the VA regulations, saying that all precedent opinions are binding on the board, et cetera. And so you're in the exact same situation we're in now, where they're creating a rule that's binding in all cases. If the board were to itself adjudicate the issue in a non-binding opinion, okay, then that would be appealed here, and then this court would determine whether the board's decision was correct.
Okay, so you're saying then that what happens to Dr. Osmond's case, what you're saying is, in order for them to issue the same opinion, come up with the same result, they got to publish it for notice and comment.
Yes, right? Your Honor.
And then they can enter, and assuming that the comment doesn't change their mind, they can produce the same rule. What happens to Dr. Osmond's case in the interim?
Your Honor,
and everybody's similarly situated.
In the interim, those individuals can go before the board and have their case adjudicated by the board in a non-binding way that just applies to those individuals, and then those individuals can appeal to this court mm-hmm. on the basis of that.
Okay. Could we, are there any other alternatives for us now here, assuming we agree with your determination that this requires?
Yes, Your Honor. Another option would be to rule that Mr. Osmond, under Section 552, cannot be adversely affected by a matter required to be published that was not published, and therefore overturn the ruling as to him in particular, and order the court below to overturn that ruling and grant him the benefits that he has requested. And another option would be to put aside the procedural matters and rule that the actual holding of the precedent opinion is contrary to the law, and that the law actually provides for concurrent benefits. In the absence of any language, the presumption in favor of veterans, in addition to congressional intent, would indicate that the law provides concurrent benefits, and therefore concurrent benefits should be granted to Mr. Osmond. So those are the three options that this court would have in ruling on the matter.
Before we go any further, I forgot to ask if you wanted to reserve time.
Oh, sorry, Your Honor. Yes, I would like to reserve 5 minutes.
All right, then the time clock will be adjusted. Going back, following up on Judge Hagel's questions, if the general counsel's opinion is gap-filling and creating a rule, then there is no rule.
That's correct, Your Honor.
If there is no rule, which rule is it you're saying? There's no rule prohibiting concurrent?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And explain to us why you believe there is concurrent, why it is allowed to have concurrent benefits.
Your Honor, in the absence of a rule prohibiting concurrent benefits, and in being consistent with the congressional intent that a child be aided in achieving the education that child would have received absent his parents' disability, it would require a rule that concurrent benefits be granted. So if we are interpreting, quote unquote, the statute in an absence of a provision addressing it, then The only place to look would be congressional intent. And in addition to that...
But if there's congressional, well, only congressional intent, there's nothing in the statutes that you can point to that would indicate that there might be concurrent benefits available?
Your Honor, there is perhaps something, and that would be that the statute does expressly prohibit dual benefits in certain situations, and it does not do so in this situation.
Where are those?
That would be in Section 5304, Part B1. And that relates to pension compensation, dependency, and indemnity compensation.
And your theory is that because it applies to two?
Yes, Your Honor, because Congress has explicitly provided a prohibition against dual benefits in that context, that would indicate that its failure to provide a similar prohibition in the Chapter 35 context means that Congress did not intend for such a prohibition to exist. Now, certainly, we're not engaging in any real analysis of a text, and that's simply because there is no text. So, I mean, these are the only kinds of things for us to go off of. But there's nothing that prohibits it, and there's certainly these aids in interpretation that would suggest that Congress did not intend to prohibit it.
What could I ask you along those lines, as I did Dr. Osmond, what is your view of 38 U.S.C. 3511, which would appear to limit to each eligible person entitlement to nothing in excess of 45 months of benefits?
Yes, Your Honor.
You want to take a minute to look at the statute?
I have it in front of me, Your Honor. That provision would apply for an individual seeking benefits as to one parent. And when that individual seeking benefits to two parents, then that should be doubled. However,
But it says eligible person. Each eligible person. Who's the eligible person?
Mr. Osmond, Your Honor.
So it says each... Well, how could it be more clear than if each eligible person shall be entitled to educational assistance under this chapter for an aggregate period not in excess of 45 months? So...
Your Honor,
What you would say, I take it, am I taking it, I don't want to put words in your mouth, that he'd be entitled to 45 months for each parent, right?
So that's correct, Your Honor, because if one parent was injured, he would be entitled to 45 months. To accord with congressional intent, he would also need to be required to be given another 45 months. However, there is another way to read that. And that would be that he is only entitled to 45 months, and that's how the VA interpreted it in 1992. And then he would be entitled to concurrent benefits during that 45 months. Okay. So there are two ways to read
that. Can I follow up on that? Are you, as Mr. Osmond, I think, was arguing, that he gets the benefit of both, that he could either get concurrent payments for the full 45 months, which would be two payments, or he could get, for example, 45 payments through his father and an additional 10 payments through his mother. He could do either or.
That's correct, Your Honor.
As long as he got a total of 45 months for both, that would be it.
Yes, Your Honor. There could be...
Does the second sentence in 3511A1 help you?
I'm sorry, in 3511, Your Honor?
3511A1. Yes. Sorry.
Yes, Your Honor, actually, it does.
And how?
It states that any payment of an educational assistance shall not be charged against the entitlement of any individual under this chapter.
So, well, maybe I got it wrong.
I'm
B1,
sorry.
Second sentence. In no event...
B1.
Is that not in there? Has it been deleted?
So, this is A1, second sentence.
Thank you.
In no event may the aggregate educational assistance afforded to a spouse made eligible under both 3501 and 3501A of this title exceed 45 months.
All right, does that...
Your Honor, I don't...
Does that indicate that Congress was thinking about the possibility of someone being entitled under two provisions, possibly being entitled under A1D1 as a surviving spouse for somebody who was disabled, who then died and then became eligible as a surviving spouse of somebody who had deceased, and Congress said specifically, even though you have dual eligibility, you only get limited to 45 months?
Yes, Your Honor, that does show that
and
Congress...
Would that indicate that perhaps they didn't consider that limitation on 45 months to apply to any other dual eligibility provisions?
Yes, Your Honor, that would accord with the previous interpretive canon that if they provided an exclusion in this instance and not in the Chapter 35 instance as it pertains to a child.
So if that were to provide some support for your argument that you could get more than 45 months or the dual 45 plus 45, what do you have to support that you can get it concurrently? You can get two $700 payments or whatever the amount is.
Yes, Your Honor, there's nothing that specifically addresses that question. But in order for the child to receive that education that the child would have received absent the injury, then that would require concurrent benefits. So in the absence of any provision specifically addressing that issue, then congressional intent would be really one of the only ways to resolve that problem.
Mr. Thompson, on page 9 of your supplemental memorandum, you discuss Splain and distinguish it from the case under consideration. And in the second full paragraph of that memorandum, you indicate that the VA, by its actions, that is the GC's interpretation, has completely eliminated Mr. Osmond's right to receive educational benefits based on his mother's permanent and total service-connected disability, right? And as I understand the circumstances here, prior to the general counsel's opinion, concurrent benefits had been paid to eligible recipients. So your reference to eliminating his right is a reference to the direct impact of that change on an eligible recipient. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. It's a reference to the notion that this rule is being applied wholesale to an entire class of individuals, completely denying them this entitlement and binding agency discretion.
Okay. Are you familiar at all with how concurrent benefits may have been paid before General Counsel's opinion in 2002?
No, Your Honor, I'm not familiar with the procedures and those matters with how it was administered, but I could certainly look into the matter if the court would like and provide supplemental authority.
Thanks. I'll save that question also for the Secretary.
You cited this previously to 5304 as a provision, which is a totally different chapter, but what about 3562, non-duplication of benefits?
Again, that's, Your Honor, another provision where they expressly provide for non-duplication of benefits in certain contexts.
What's that context, and how is it compared to what we have here?
That context is, again, compensation, dependency, indemnity, which does not relate to the Chapter 35 scheme at all. And, again, that's another instance where they provide an express exclusion of duplication and did not do so in the Chapter 35 context. And again, it shows why Congress would not have wanted it to be applied in the Chapter 35 context. They certainly knew how to speak on the issue, and their failure to do so in this instance shows that they didn't want to do so. And I see that my time is running out, so if there's no further questions,
I see none up here. Thank you very much.
Thank you.